Good evening and welcome. I'm going to be talking about, as Cynthia said, Patuxent Village's invisible landmarks. And landmarks are invisible for various reasons and in various ways. Actually, I'm not going to lecture. Audible sigh of relief. I'm really going to ask you questions. Two kinds of questions. One is to help identify some of the landmarks and what's there now. And I've divided these landmarks into six categories. 2 times 3, a significant number. The first one we're going to deal with, and I think they're right up here, are gone but not forgotten. Or we could say maybe we're so sorry. Number two are a very few, fortunately. Nature is not necessarily a preservationist. A third category is not gone, just hiding. A fourth category is we're glad they're invisible. A fifth category is time is a clever pickpocket. And the last one is let's give ourselves a hand. You could probably figure out what some of these categories are. So the quiz portion of this discussion tonight is for you to help identify the old photograph, what it was, where it was, and then tell me, or tell us all, what's there now. I'm cheating. I did some research, but the research sources aren't always accurate. And so another part of this program this evening, if you want to come up afterwards and look at the map of the National Preservation District of Patuxent, every single property within the district is identified on that map. And in the notebook below the map on the table, they're discussed. I found already a few little mistakes in that. So if you find your property in there and there are mistakes, just write a little note there so I'll know. And I can pass that along to the Preservation Commission. Holly, for example, they have your house listed as being at 33 South Atlantic. Did the number change? Or?
No, it's been 35.
It's been 35? Interesting. Okay, the second.
You want me to turn that on? Or?
Sure, go ahead.
Give me the word mic on. Okay, and
the second kind of questions I'm going to be asking you are not so detailed as the first kind, but they're really discussion questions, and they're things that we should think about, and we could start discussing this evening. And I'll throw them out at you at various times, but basically they're about 6 or 7 questions, and if you can read that far, you can read them on the wall. I'll give you a break and I'll read them for you. These are sort of in the order that I'm going to be bringing up these questions. One is, what responsibilities do we have as residents of Patuxent Village in ensuring that what we've inherited from the past of our built landscape, what responsibilities do we have to ensure that it passes into the future, if any? Another question, what is meant by preservation? I said they were broad questions. The third one, who decides what should be preserved, if anything? Another question, where do we establish the balance between individual rights of the property owner and the good of the community, on the other hand? Some older structures have survived. How? What does it mean to have Patuxent listed as a National Register Historic District, which it has been since 1973? What does it mean for the Warwick side of Patuxent Village to be designated a City Historic District? And how is that different from a National Historic District? I won't be giving you an exam, by the way, at the end of this, so you look concerned. And finally, why isn't the Cranston side of Patuxent Village also a City Historic District, like Warwick is? A lot to think about and discuss. So if someone wants to turn off the lights, we'll let the fun begin. Oh, it's on. I keep repeating my mantra, technology is our friend. Okay, everybody know what this place is?
Madeline does.
Madeline?
Avon.
Yeah, but...
Bridge?
It was on Avon, well, it was between Avon and Bridge Street, right? The Thornton House, or I think more commonly called the Batty House, that dates from around the Revolution. What's there now? I think it's the parking lot for Cameron's.
Yeah.
Well, this begins the gone but not forgotten, or the oh, we're so sorry, invisible landmarks. And let me say a word first about what an invisible landmark is. We're all familiar with the Rhode Island custom of saying, you know, bang a left where something used to be. Well, I never had a term for those, and most of us probably never had a term for those landmarks until a friend of mine who was writing a novel about Rhode Island, well, set in Rhode Island, and it begins with discovering a body in the landfill, which I thought was very Rhode Island, incorporating all sorts of things into that one little scene. Anyway, she was trying to contextualize her novel, and so she wanted to talk as she went along about what made Rhode Island special and different. And she came up with the term invisible landmarks for turn left or right where such and such used to be. And I like the term so much I stole it from her with her permission. She since moved to Massachusetts, so she doesn't really count anymore, does she? And she wasn't born in Rhode Island to start with, so what can I say? I start with an easy one. Most of you probably know what this was. No. The Golden Ball, right. The Golden Ball Inn and Tavern. And where was it located?
Coles Farm.
Yeah, Coles Farm, which is kind of like where?
Industrial Park.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Across from the Patuxent Nursing Home. Henry Brown gave me a lot of stuff, photographs. And he gave me this map, which I think is going to be in the bridge, the upcoming edition of the bridge. But the map was done in 1895. And it shows, I think you can see Frank Cole right here. This is what we call Post Road. Up here it was called Main Street at one time. And there's Cole's farm. Of course, that's what's there now. Is this thing actually focusing itself, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It's not bad.
It looks a little fuzzy to me. And so it was probably right about where the second road goes in, or the farthest road from the village. It looks a little fuzzy. That's the road. So it must have been right about in that area, perhaps on a little rise. Near the road. And what did this used to be, which is right next to the road?
It's called a farm.
Yeah, it was the dairy barn for the farm when, at its very end. It was first the Patuxent Inn and Tavern, a stagecoach stop. It was a place where the Negro elections were usually held every year. And then it became a farm. It was the Coles farm for a long time, very successful farm. And then it ended its days in the late 40s as a dairy farm. And it was torn down, I think, in 1951. Now here's another easy one. Some people even went to this school, I'm sure, right? Which school was it? Yeah, Tuxet Grammar School.
Yeah.
Actually, according to Henry Brown, it was the third grammar school. The first two were located on North Fair Street, and then further in on North Fair Street.
Whose house is next door?
Holly.
Holly Ewald.
Holly.
That's her house right here. 35, not 33. So what's there now where the school used to be? It was torn down in 1935, 1937. Yeah, Holly's side yard. But I really like, see that tree? Well, here's what it looked like. The school was built in 1880, and of course it was torn down because the Wyman School was up and running by 1938. I think it's 38.
When was it torn down?
Between 35 and 37, according to the, I think that's a Preservation Commission report. How about this structure? Janet.
Well, the Masons used it. It was Joe Hansen's Bolsters. It's the corner of Bank Street and
right, corner of Bank Street and Post Road. It was the first Harmony, Masonic Harmony Lodge where they met first. I think in the beginning it was known as Mitchell's Tavern. It was another one of those taverns. There were lots of taverns in the Post Road area. These people that were traveling back and forth. This was a main artery from New York to Boston, actually. And before that, it was the part of the Pequot Trail. So it was a Native American path also, where they would forge the river, not at the falls, but up near where Shaw's is now. There was a ford. This was built around 1760. The Harmony Lodge, first meeting was held there, I think, in 1805, and it continued there for 43 years. What's there now?
Madeline's safe. That's incorrect. She won't speak out loud, so I'll tell her.
Okay.
She says the second church I've done, the second meeting from the
The second meeting was in your house, okay.
That's when they chose home.
That's which Rhodes house is that you live in?
Christopher.
Christopher Rhodes, okay. It's the first one now mm-hmm. on Post Road next to Hunter's. It used to be the second one. Yeah, but what's there now basically is the cut-through road that goes, it's the continuation of Post Road on that one-way section that goes by the Bank Cafe. It goes on the south side of the Bank
Cafe. And the little
cafe.
Telephone building, isn't that
the one? Oh, there was a telephone building.
No, that little thing.
There
it
is now.
That little thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's basically where the street is. And that's why they tore it down in 1961, which was to make a way for that one-way cut-through to Narragansett Parkway, because Post Road was too narrow and considered too dangerous on the curve that's one-way going west. Do some people actually remember all these changes happening? That's good. Well, speaking of Post Road, that's probably one of the most often seen scenes of Patuxent Village. And you can see the Bank Cafe here. So you're looking down Post Road. Obviously, it was in the era when they had either the horse cars or the streetcars by then, the electric streetcars. You can see Lima's stables. In the early 1900s, an Azorean immigrant, his name was Manuel Lima, rented out what was then kind of a dilapidated Robert Rhodes house, and he used it for his cows. And Hazel Kennedy wrote about him taking his cows and driving them up Main Street or Post Road to Cole's farm to pasture and stopping traffic along the way. What's there now? Well, that's about the same scene. So this is the Christopher Rhodes house where Madeline lived, and then the Robert Rhodes house was right here. So now, of course, that's what it looked like. that was from. I think that was built in 1740. It was demolished in the 1930s. So it's been gone for quite a while. What's there now is, of course, Hunter's parking lot. And I think we've seen this particular photograph many times, or versions of it. The Johnson Blacksmith that was built around 1860. And what's there now? Yeah, Hunter's, right. These are too easy, you're not answering. They're going to get harder. Believe me, they'll get harder. Yeah, Hunter's. How about this nice looking building?
Ah, Aborn Tavern.
There you go, Aborn Tavern. Anybody remember when it was torn down? Well, this photo was from 1952. They said it was torn down later.
I can't remember the year.
What I found was 1964. Does that sound right? They even had October 25th, so...
I don't think it lasted until 64.
Really?
I would question that.
Yeah, well, this photo is from 52. Of course, what's in the back?
I would believe 54. More than
6 years. Yeah. We'll check those dates. Well, that was on Bridge Street, of course. Which means something else is there now, which would be what?
Parking lot.
Yeah. Ta-da! Because you can see in the background behind the tavern, you can see the Patuxent Athletic Club. And it's still there. But the tavern is long gone.
Well, it's getting pretty.
Huh? Welcome, Henry.
Oh.
Okay. Does anybody remember this place?
I remember.
Yeah. Was it across the street?
Across from it? No.
It's where the Sunoco parking lot is?
It's the west side.
It was on the west side.
That's the west side street.
So it's where the Sunoco...
Because the one that, the three-decker beside it survived when the gas station was there, and then finally the three-decker went down and they took the rest of the land right to the pool.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
So this is where the Sunoco is now.
Yes.
And this is where the parking lot of the Sunoco is now.
Yeah.
Right next to Tucker.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the Preservation Commission was correct with their numbers, because they had odd numbers, which would be on west side of the street.
West side of the street.
Yeah. So it was across the street from... Yeah, I think it's interesting what they did here. They took a Federalist house, a colonial house, and they raised it up, and then they built underneath the commercial thing, Watson's pastry shop.
That actually has been commonly done.
Yeah, very common. And now everything's gone, both of those, and the three-decker next to it. Whoops, let me go back. Yeah, that is William Watson, who was the son of Walter, with whom we'll talk about in a minute. I guess he went to a private academy. Son of Walter Watson. Doc Watson, who started the first pharmacy. The drugstore, yeah. But I think he's the one that had the bakery and the grill. William Watson. Uh-huh. Well, you know where this is, right? You can tell by the context. Do you remember this place? It was, and again, it's one of those houses that was raised, and then a commercial enterprise was put underneath it, so you got a business there, which was a radio store at this time, which, judging from the car there, was probably early 50s.
I had a discussion with somebody in the coffee shop, because it's telling me that that's where Pat's Deli started, and I said, no, it was on the other side. where Sunoco is. No, 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 it was by the church. Well, we went back and forth and finally found this picture and pointed it out. And I don't remember it. I don't know why I don't remember it. Because certainly it's during my lifetime, but for some reason I was blinded.
Well, do you know when they demolished this structure? I know the church bought it and then had it removed or demolished.
This has got to be 50s. Uh-huh. Look at the age of the
portion. Well,
yeah, the car. That could happen.
Yeah. Sometime in the 50s.
It was demolished in the 50s, early 50s.
Yeah. Early 50s. Okay. Well, probably not long after this photograph was taken. Of course, now it's a green area next to the church. That was a nice house. You notice I'm showing a lot of Cranston stuff. It's not really because I live in Cranston, but we have more invisible landmarks, I think, than the Warwick side, unfortunately. Henry, you know what this is?
Oh, wait a minute. Is that the one that they took down for the deli?
No, near there though, next to it, pretty much.
Yeah, the one that still survives.
Yeah, it's between Cumberland. Yeah, it's next to Cumberland. It's a Cumberland Farms parking lot, actually. This was the Remington Smith House.
No, to the right of the telephone pole.
Right,
isn't
there
that little bit of where the coffee shop and the hairdresser are?
No, Michael, that was torn down?
The Remington Smith House, yeah. Between 1957 and 61.
Yeah, I have a photograph of that being demolished.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, here's, according to the number, oh yeah, right. The Tuxedo.
Yeah.
The Tuxedo, yeah.
Machino,
right.
Demolished
them. Yeah, that's 2150. Now, here's one that was at 2148 Broad Street. Okay. We're going back. You want to go back to the Simeon Smith House. Actually, it was listed in the 1965 directory, so that means it was torn down after 1965.
I had my 16th birthday.
Okay.
Now
you have to know. Okay. Yeah, the number 2160. You had a 16th birthday party there?
I did.
Okay. What was going on in the Simeon Smith House that you would have a birthday party?
Annie Totten's daughter, Susan, lived there at the time with her two children. I used to babysit for them. And they did a little birthday performance.
Great. How was it inside?
At that time, it was pretty much intact. I mean, it wasn't like beautifully restored, but it was intact.
Michael, the house behind the telephone pole is Michael Bedrosian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the late Victorian. Right. Well, you can see it there, too.
Yeah.
Still there. Okay. Now, this is the Remington Smith, not the Simeon Smith. And this one is at 2150 Broad Street. And this was torn down in the late 50s.
Where
was 2150 Broad Street. You know what's next to it? We'll see that in a while. Well, Cumberland Farms is 2948. And your numbers go up toward the bridge.
Did it survive?
No.
Did it go off today?
No. We'll see that in a while. This was one that didn't survive. You see the two chimneys?
Uh-huh.
The one that survived is a nice center chimney.
Right.
This is what's here now.
Oh, it was between us.
Right. next to the survivor in Cumberland Farms. Well, here's a second kind of landmark under the heading, nature is not necessarily a preservationist. So sometimes these structures go not by our means, but because nature deems it so. The Rhode Island Yacht Club, that was supposedly the second oldest yacht club in the U.S. I don't know if anybody's verified. You keep hearing that, supposedly the second oldest yacht club in the U.S. This structure was built 1875, 1876. Another one was built in, I think, 1940, because the first two were destroyed by hurricanes. Yeah. And there we have the 1956 version. This is still there. Yeah. I took this, I think, 2 days ago when they were about ready to start ripping out some marsh grass. You saw the papers this morning. You saw the story and saw the photograph of the swans
and the red wing
hovering underneath the backhoe. Well, I'm sure everybody who's been around Patuxent as a child would remember this. At the end of the neck.
No, that's the end of the season.
It was probably taken from the near the Bettis Boatyard.
Yeah,
somewhere in that area. And yeah, that's the oyster house that was built in the early 1900s.
Yeah, 1912.
I mean, it was the
Pettis built that one. The Oyster King.
Yeah, one was built in 1850. And then, yeah, I think maybe it was even, this one was mid-19th century. And this photograph was taken in the early 1900s. It was a family residence.
Yeah, Pettis had a dock, and I've seen pictures with the oyster boats tied up against the, right adjacent to the building.
Yeah, they used to get oysters out by Starfgoat Island, wasn't it?
Yeah, Robert Pettis owned the island, and was built on oyster shells.
Yeah, there was a shell, a whole shell island, too.
Yeah.
After it was the oyster house, it was different families lived there, I think, from around 1920 to 1954 with the hurricane. Kind of swept right through the house, and so it was abandoned. And there were several arson fires there, and then finally the Cranston Fire Department burned it purposely in 1960. I don't know if anybody remembers seeing that fire. It must have been visible. It was in January of 1960. And I took this photograph from the Pettis Boatyard couple of days ago. Things have changed a bit. There's still a nice large house out there. It's a newer one. And you can see they're dredging out there. Now it's Janet's house. This one look familiar? It would be hard. Probably hard to identify it, but it's still there. Because now we're into the third kind of invisible landmarks. Not gone, just hiding.
Isn't that the one that's up by the deli that
didn't
survive?
Yeah. the Elisha Smith house that was built around 1740, and that's at 2154 Broad Street.
Without the blue jump.
Right.
Michael, where was this?
That's 2154 Broad Street.
Yeah, but in relation to what's there today?
You have the picture. Yeah.
That's what's there today?
Oh.
It's not gone. It's just hiding under remodeling. You can see what's been done to it. So that brings up one of our questions, you know, what is meant by preservation? Has this house been preserved?
No.
Well, I mean...
Well, let's see. It's still there.
Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah, it is still there.
If it's still there, and if what changes have been made are reversible, yeah, then in a sense you can say, it's been preserved. I mean, you could always remove the bow windows. I mean, Madeline removed bow windows on her house. I think, was it a furniture store?
So did Tom DeMolle.
And so she went back and reinstalled the kind of windows that were there when the house was built. So I suppose it could be done. You could take off the vertical siding, you could change the windows. Basically the house is intact. So here's an interesting example of a house that goes into hiding, or a structure. You all know what this is, right?
Commercial Street
School, or the Red School House. The Red School House. Well, the photograph that I got from the Cranston Historical Society said the photograph was from 1930, which couldn't be. It couldn't be possible. Anybody know why?
The gas lamp.
The gas lamp.
Well, that could be. Yeah. I didn't pick up on the gas lamp because something else got my attention.
Telephone pole?
No, it's way in the back behind the church. It's barely visible.
Oh, is that Trinity?
Oh, church.
That's the top. Arnold's.
That's the top.
Post
of
office.
No.
The grocery store.
That's the top of the house.
It's the top of the Huldah Chase Smith house.
Yeah, that's the Huldah Chase.
Oh, the Huldah Chase.
It's still there. You know where it is? Where is it?
On the corner of Ocean and Rush Street.
Yeah, next to Cumberland Park. It's hiding behind that great big copper beech tree, which is good. But that house wasn't built, well, it was built around 1892, which means that, first of all, if you can see that house in the background, it means this school was on the west side of Commercial Street, right?
Yes.
Right.
It was moved to the east side of Commercial Street in, when was it?
Did that become the fire department?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was moved in July of 1897. So the photograph had to be taken between 1892 when this house was built in 1897 when it was moved across the street. Isn't this fun?
Michael, do you have a photograph of the next school that was located?
Well, no. Well, here's the...
Yes.
That's the door seat.
Yeah, I have it, but I didn't bring it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's the Chase Smith house, which is still there. I think this is taken from the Ocean Avenue side.
Yeah, before they built the
right.
Children's houses.
Right, and this would be the Broad Street, because it's set way back.
What's it in there now?
What's where?
It's a residence.
Oh, yeah, well, it was.
Residence?
John probably knows, but your mother was staying there for a while.
Right, that's right. She was on the second floor. Mm-hmm. High ceilings, window boxes. It's beautiful history.
Yeah. I don't know what's there now. Is it offices?
It's still apartments.
Res apartments? Okay.
Yeah.
I know they did a number on the front lawn.
Yeah, check that tree.
A lot of asphalt.
Yeah.
The tree couldn't be saved. They really did try to save the tree.
Yeah.
It couldn't be saved.
Okay, you can see the schoolhouse, right? When they moved it to the other side of the street? It's hard to see the little steeple up there, the bell tower of the schoolhouse. But that is the Commercial Street Schoolhouse, that building, which in 1897 was moved across the street and then raised up for the Patuxent Volunteer Fire Department. You know, people were moving houses around a lot in those days. And Kevin Jordan, who's an architect at Roger Williams University Preservation Program, explained that to me. He said, you know, in those days, labor was a lot cheaper than materials. So instead of tearing a place down and building something new, and they just took something that someone didn't want that was somewhere they didn't want it and moved it to where you wanted it. And that was a lot cheaper. And people were doing that quite a bit in those days. We don't think about it too much now. We don't do that. People now buy a lot and tear down the house and build a McMansion on it and don't think twice about it. And here's how it looks now.
The schoolhouse still stands.
You can still, I don't, see, it's hiding. The schoolhouse is still there, but it is invisible. It's really well hidden. You would never know, would you? It's pretty neat. And then they built the concrete block addition here. Now, of course, it's not the Volunteer Fire Department. I think since 1995, I think they shut down. Yeah, you know, the falls are one of the favorite shots for photographers, taking pictures from the falls on to the bridge or from the cove onto the bridge and into the falls. And it's really nice because over time you can see some of the changes in the architecture. It's kind of accidental that this architecture gets into the photograph, but it really leaves a pretty good record of incremental change over time. And this shows what's called the Hayward Block, right up there on the left. Just the last structure on the east side of Broad Street on the Cranston side of the bridge. That was built all beginning around 1898 to the early 20th century. And it was built originally by Joseph B. Hayward. And it was described as a two-story Italianate structure. I would like to see the original. I don't know when this photograph was taken. It looks like it still has the second story on it, which burned down in the early 20th century. They had a fire in the upper story. And so then it was modified to the current flat roof version that we have now. That's this one here. Yeah. There's been several businesses in that. Anybody know what this was? Oh, yeah. The market.
Barbershop on the second floor.
Yeah, there was a barber shop on the second floor. I think, wasn't this the Patuxent Public Market that was owned by Benjamin Wilbur? And supposedly there was a confectioner, David Moore. Candy's also in this place. I blew this up really, really a lot on the computer so I could see what he was selling. And he had everything. There were pineapples here, which it kind of amazed me.
Wilbur also occupied the where the Gatsby Lounge is, and that was a grocery store. He occupied that for a while.
Okay.
And after he retired in the 1930s, mm-hmm. He committed suicide by hanging. Wow. Found him hanging in his room, and he was in a small room and hanging by the neck.
When was that about?
Committed suicide. I have the article about it.
Was this the photograph of Wilbur?
I can't tell you.
This is someone inside the store.
Yeah. still alive in the 1930s. That probably that photograph looked like it was taken in probably 1908 or 10 or something.
Yeah, really early. Mm-hmm. Early part of this century. Of course, we know what's there now. Tails, the barbershop, the Patuxet, now it's Patuxet Restaurant and Pizza. Pizza is new. And of course, Deer Hearts. Well, this is hiding because I have no idea where this house is now. Supposedly it's on Tucker Avenue now. Originally it was on Broad Street. It's called the Smith House. It was said to be diagonally across from the Baptist Church. And I'm not sure where that would be. Can anybody recognize this? Obviously, this is no earlier than what, the 1930s? Looking at the car. Well, supposedly it was moved to Tucker Avenue. And a lot of people pointed to this house and said, yeah, it must be the one at 27 Tucker.
No.
But it's
yes,
not. It really couldn't be.
There's a discussion in the back here.
Well, this house also was moved from Broad Street to Tucker Avenue.
I lived there. That was moved.
27 Tucker.
Yeah, when they put Tucker Avenue in, that's when it was moved.
It was moved, right. They put Tucker Avenue in, what, 1895, 96?
I think it was around then.
Right. And there were two houses that were moved from Broad Street to Tucker. One is the Chase House, which is across the street from 27, which originally, I think, was in Woonsocket, built in 1700s, moved to Broad Street subsequently, and then moved to Tucker Avenue. I mean, these houses have a past, a history. They're not just, you know, planted in one place and stay there like we think of houses today. They traveled. They would have stories to tell if we could listen to them. So, yeah. Yeah, it's a brick ender, and they moved it, which I was told the other night which was not, certainly not impossible or even that difficult. And it's also has two external chimneys on either gable end, which just makes it unusual too. And you see this house has an internal chimney, no external chimneys. Everything's different. It has about the same number of A's, but that doesn't mean anything. So this is a Center Hall house. Madeline, when you went into the front door, what did you go into?
Front hall, and then second floor stairs.
Okay. That also makes it unusual for this area. And this is the way it looks, well, the way it looked last fall. Well, another category of invisible landmarks is, boy, we're glad they're invisible. I mean, that, you know, that brings up the question, what do we want to preserve? Do we want to preserve everything? And if not, how do we decide what's important to keep? Who makes that decision? Something we need to think about. Is it just the person who owns the property? Or does the community have something to say about it? Should the community have something? About it is a question. Of course, that was our zip gas. My kids used to joke every time we went by there, and they say that's because it has zip octane. Wise guys. And you can see the gas bee lounge in the background. Who's that? You recognize yourself, Henry?
I do.
Taking photographs last fall of kids who were doing a walking tour. And that was the very end of the zip gas structure. Not long after that, it was gone completely. And not long after that, there was something else. Anybody know what's there now? Yeah. Not ready to move in yet, but there they are. Well, it's important to remember that Patuxent Village doesn't represent just one architectural style. I mean, we go back to colonial, federalist, early Victorian, late Victorian, early 20th century, mid 20th century. So we go all the way up, including capes and so on. I mean, you know, it is an organic neighborhood, meaning it changes sometimes with or without our direct involvement or input. Now, this is the number five category of invisible landmarks that I call time is a clever pickpocket. Meaning, it's only when you look back do you realize that something's missing. While it's happening, you're not really aware of it because it happens incrementally. It happens very slowly sometimes. So things change. And as you go through, like, one of the favorite scenes for Patuxent Village is looking from the bridge or the Warwick side across the bridge into the Broad Street Commercial Center. And as you slowly go through, or incrementally go through, these scenes, they don't seem to change too much until we start comparing decades. This is Watson's Pharmacy, which was originally built with a gable end to the street like that.
The yellow house is the Haywood.
Yeah, the Hayward House.
Hayward House.
And his grain company was behind it.
Yeah, Murray Upham tore that down in the 1930s.
Hmm. And those elms are gone now.
Isn't that the one where the hat shop was? The hat shop was in there.
What, in the Hayward House?
Yeah.
The hat shop.
Yeah, that last one.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
That's the parking lot for...
The Hayward House is the parking lot in the mini mall, Doggy Doo's mini mall. Now, next to what used to be Patuxent Paint and Hardware.
And what used to be American Video.
American Video, yeah. And a pizza place, and a jewelry store, which is now Latitudes, and Water's Edge, right? Incremental. Now this is from around 1914, around World War I era, with the streetcars. Still pretty much intact with early houses along Broad Street. This is maybe even earlier. This may be in the late 1890s. But you can see Watson's is there.
Nice tree.
And in the Hayward block, they called it. Twice told tales now. What did you say, Janet?
I said nice tree instead of a billboard.
Oh, yeah. Those are the elm trees, aren't they, Henry?
Yeah.
They were a stand of elm trees on the, on the north side of Watson's. And there was a little lunch place right here on the west side of
that was a bakery.
Broad Street. Yeah.
Then adjacent to that was the Union Station, Union Horse Depot.
Okay, and there was a post office.
The post office was in the with Arnold's post office and also grocery store. And then the post office left there and for a short time moved across the street to the Haywood.
Right.
Was postmaster for a couple of years, and then it moved back to Arnold's again.
Was that where the Citizens Bank is?
If I...
Was it where the Citizens Bank
Citizens
is?
Citizens Bank is, yes.
Okay. Great.
Michael, was it still a wooden sidewalk to the bridge in that last picture?
Oh, I don't know. The kid's wearing knickers, so.
I think Henry would know. I think we're on our seventh bridge now. Is that right, Henry?
Tenth. I think it's the tenth, isn't it?
What was the question? I can't hear.
Which bridge are we on now? The 1932-33? Is that the 10th?
1884, the last bridge. The stone bridge.
The one we're on now, is it the 10th bridge?
Yes, the last bridge. And this was an overhang. And then 1932, the 28 to 32, the state changed it. They moved this boardwalk.
Right, and this is
pulled up the fence.
Right.
There's a one little section of fence remaining on the north side of the bridge. There's a little, I think, two sections of the iron fence.
Yeah.
Still remaining.
Right up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I noticed it because my dogs like it. I'm going to tell you why. All the dogs like it. Yeah, this was probably about 1908, something like that. Still not much changes. But when you get to the 1950s, this is probably the early 1950s, then the changes seem very dramatic. The bike shop, on the east side you have what? Cameron's, the Seven Seas Restaurant.
And Sorelli's
Liquors. Yeah, Patuxent Liquors. Then on the west side, you see there's the cycle shop, which is where the dry cleaners is now, right? Mm-hmm. The First National Stores, which is where the mini mall and tailoring thing is, I guess. Yep. Jimmy's Driftwood, which was still there when I moved in 1981. Now it's Basta. Mm-hmm. Then there's a drugstore.
Gladding's,
was that a drugstore? Gladding's, okay, I wanted to know that.
Then there was a shoe store.
There was Giordano's Macaroni. Well, when I blew this up and looked at it, it's Giordano Macaroni. Now, I don't know what that means, but no one remembers Giordano's Macaroni?
No. He must have been in all the
party. These things happen, don't they?
Was it Marconi?
Marconi?
Marconi? Radio shop?
Slocum had a
radio shop just about that location.
M-A-C-A-R-O.
Slocum and Gary and Slocum had a little shop there. They sold radios and repaired all kinds of.
And then there was some of the Sunoco gas station was there, at least part of it. It may have been a smaller version. Was there a smaller version of the Sunoco station? It was the Sun Oil Company that bought it in the 1950s. And this is the mid-1950s, a little later, but things have changed. On the east side, there's, I don't know, there's a beauty salon, and what is it called, the Dallas? This one. The Dales? It's hard for me to read the sign. I guess that's now where the barbershop is, right?
Yeah.
And then there was
the hairdresser was upstairs.
Okay, upstairs.
And the first floor was the hardware, Patuxent Hardware.
Right, well, Acme Hardware.
Acme. That was the Tony Majowski.
Okay. And then Cameron's across the Bridge Street. And then the Upham Commercial Block, as it's called. That's the Patuxent Paint and Hardware and the real estate. Of course, now, and then even further up, you can see the Oddfellows Hall, which at that time was Lindsay's Market. And next to that was an Esso gas station, right?
Yes. Esso.
Where River's Edge is now.
Yes.
The parking lot of River's Edge and Lindsay's. Yeah. And this is the way it looked 2 days ago. Again, when you're living it, you don't really notice the changes too much.
noticed.
But when you look back, in time chunks, then the changes seem a lot more dramatic. And you ask the question, well, you know, when does this cease to be Patuxent Village? Or will it always be Patuxent Village, no matter what happens to the landscape? That's a question I didn't write on the paper, but I'm asking you anyway to think about that. Well, there's the second, I guess, the first remodeling of Watson's Pharmacy, the Patuxent Pharmacy. Yeah, the advertising slogans down here. The plant place down here. Yeah. And that house is still here. We'll see that. Yes. We'll see that in a minute. Yeah, Doc Watson, well, after he opened the pharmacy, Walter Watson was known from then on as Doc Watson. And he opened it in the spring of 1889.
Is him standing in the doorway? There's a big guy standing in the doorway.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be.
He's got a...
You have better eyes than I do. Right here, this guy or...
No, right there.
Okay, yeah. The picture is a little...
And has he got a beard?
Yeah, that might be him.
That might be the same guy back about...
Right. Well, this was probably 1916, around that time. Because it was just before then, or around that time, that he modernized the store by taking the gable down and making it a flat roof. So it started to conform to the other commercial structures north of him on Broad Street. Given that you know, the business look, the flat top, instead of a house look with a gable roof. There he is. I don't know when this was taken.
He has no beard, do you?
No beard. Very kind of formal.
But the body looks about the same.
Yeah, same body type. Of course, it's Cameron's now. I think it was in the Watson family until the early 70s, 1970. Then it was remodeled in 1974, pretty much the way it is now.
Are they talking about building up?
Yes.
In the paper?
On top of that.
Yeah.
Yes. Just like he's done on his other properties.
Right.
The mini mall or the upper mall.
Now, to the rear is the Jackson Athletic Club.
Yeah. Right. You missed the picture of the Ebon Tavern.
The what?
The Aborn Tavern, or Ebon Tavern, which was, right, I guess, where the parking lot is now between Cameron's and PAC.
It was at the foot of the street facing the water.
Yeah. This is a pretty fuzzy old picture.
That's really
This is, again, it's that Upham commercial block that was built around 1930. And
Seven Seas Restaurant was there.
Yeah, and then, yeah. Was it Rice's Restaurant before
Rice,
Seven Seas?
Yes.
Rice's Restaurant,
well,
yeah.
Rice was about the same time, I think, as the Seven Seas.
Mm. Well, Tuxedo Paint and Hardware.
Madeline, that's Madeline, she knows.
Was the Seven Seas... The Rice Restaurant before it was Seven Seas, Madeline?
Oh, yes.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a story on that.
Okay. Well, it remained in the Upham family until the 1980s. Of course, now we have Latitudes and Water's Edge. Okay, that's the Joseph Hanson Hayward house in the front with the awnings, and behind it was the grain company. Here's a different look. You can see the grain company better. And
Michael, below the carriage house is the little restaurant. The little restaurant.
Yeah, the family restaurant.
Hmm?
The family restaurant.
The family restaurant.
Yeah, right.
So that's
right,
hidden.
Right here,
hidden.
Yeah. It's,
hidden.
It's one of those hidden landmarks, you're right. Yeah. And this is really what became the Upham's commercial block right here. Yeah, the previous one was actually this didn't become Popham, it was this. This became the north part of Cameron's, when Cameron's expanded. And it's really, Cameron's was really two buildings, the old first Patuxent Pharmacy, and then they added on to it. It's hard to tell, though. It's like a hidden landmark. I'm not even sure if the original Watson's Pharmacy structure is part of Cameron's anymore, or if that was demolished. In the beginning, it was just added on to. So now we come back to lab tapes.
The picture of a firework, selling firework. Do you have that? I think I'll let you.
Yeah, I copied that.
I think that was in the same location.
What, here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not there, but.
Well, this was the
Hayward. Those buildings, part of Cameron's Pharmacy.
Okay.
I think it was there. I'm not.
So it was an herb, it was there probably before the restaurant?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Michael, I'm at the pharmacy on the river's edge there, the hardware industry.
Yeah.
I used to work at a hardware store before we remodeled, and on that river's edge of a floor, he had that floor all sanded, the Elias, Matt Elias.
Right.
And we used to sell green supplies in there.
Right.
And on the floor, every 12 inches on some brass tacks that were still in the floor, we used to pull the rope off the wheel and drag it out to 20 feet, 30 feet. So those are still on the floor there.
That's great. Where are they?
Elias will show you. Just ask him.
All right. Because I want to look for them.
They're right inside the door.
That's great.
About 5 feet ahead of you.
You know, and if someone like you didn't give that information, you know, most of us would say, what do these mean?
Yeah.
What are these taxis?
That was our yardstick.
Great. Thanks, Ed. Well, this is the last kind of invisible landmarks, and then they're not really invisible. So let's give ourselves a hand. And the question is, yes. Or otherwise known as Comfort A. Carpenter, Dr. Comfort A. Carpenter. Well, some structures obviously have survived. The question is, how? Could be in a lot of cases. This place, now I don't know why this is listed in the 1988 survey by the Preservation Commission as having been built around 1750 or 1790. So, and they're not saying between 1750 and 1790, they're saying it was built around 1750 or 1790. They don't really explain why those two dates. It was built by a village doctor who lived here until 1830. From 1897 when this picture was taken, the mid-50s, it was owned by Thomas Gardner and his heirs. And I think at this time it was the home of Eliza Gardner.
Yeah.
Eliza D. Gardner.
What was that? Who was that?
Eliza D. Gardner lived in the house when this picture was taken in the
50s.
Yeah. And of course, it still stands. The Comfort A. Carpenter house. It's a real estate and also Norton Sock architecture. It's the first house in the National Register District on the north side of Wall Street. The sign welcoming you to the historic Patuxent Village is right here. Of course, the Patuxent Armory is still around. And why is that surviving?
This is Prince who took care of it.
Well, yeah, it usually takes either an organization or a very strong-willed individual.
Can we get a picture of Francine? There's one in the Cameron's that I gave them, that I had the original at home. She was quite a woman. She used to sit in front of that house, and boy, she looked, didn't she have me? She looked like a real character.
Well, I'm glad she had the character to care to keep
this. Before the Rangers moved in and bought the building.
Well, there are a lot of houses on the Warwick side that have been preserved. The Thomas Remington house. The William Rhodes house. So,
when was that built, Mike, roughly?
1798.
1803?
The date they had that I got was 1798. But,
it was a wedding gift to Colonel Rhodes upon it. He was married, and his marriage date was, I think, 1803.
Okay.
So,
well, that's worth investigating. But it survived, you know, many, many, many seasonal changes. You know, 200 years. More, 300 years, I guess. No, 200. You know where this one is, right?
Bridge Street.
Yeah, Bridge Street. The Remington Arnold house that was...
The side door was still
there. Yeah, isn't that funny? 1740. I think the shot I got of it, you don't see that the door is not there. You know, I took a full on. It is blowing out a little bit down
yeah.
Where the foundation is.
It's put a lot of money on it.
Yeah. So the survival of these older structures, you know, can be a tenuous, fragile process.
What are they doing with that?
Supposedly it's going to be another pub. Does anybody know the background to why the work was stopped and then started again?
White's Grocery Store, built in the 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
That was down close to the Princess Street from Maine. It moved.
Maurice used to play the organ in there on Saturday night. So
yeah, Maurice.
Years and years ago. Maurice. Then he went down to the Ocean State Theater building and
yeah, the organ that
comes up. So, who's Maurice?
Maurice was a famous Morale organist.
He was the organist. Everybody knew Maurice.
He was the organist of Morale.
Well, when he was playing organ in Rhode Island, I was closer to Oregon.
Yeah. He was well-known.
There must have been a beautiful organ in that building. He wouldn't have touched it.
Well, what was it? Was it a pub when he was
playing?
Parkway
Tavern.
Parkway Tavern.
Okay.
He used to serve wonderful dinners and meals.
Did it have residences above it, apartments? Second floor?
I guess so.
I thought
it was a horrible place upstairs.
Well, if...
Those were Janet Hartman signs.
Yeah.
Janet Hartman had those made by the prisoners up at the state prison.
Nice.
Machine shop.
We had to replace the one on Narragansett Parkway coming in.
Janet knows all about it.
Yeah. Yeah. If I remember, the city of Cranston paid for that.
The city? No.
Just the replacement.
PVA had this done to mark the entrance to the village in several locations. The stanchions were made by Cranston Public Works. The signs came because of Mr. Hardesty, who worked at the state prison, and he got them to do blue signs first.
And I put that sign up.
Good job, Ed.
How many times?
A few times.
It's still there, and there's no graffiti on it.
No.
Which is great. Yeah. Cynthia, could you turn on the lights and that?
Was it four of them?
There used to be one down Sue Road.
One at the Boulevard, and one at Broad Street, one at the Parkway, and one at Brook Street.
So, What does it mean?
I've got, I'm sure Andy does, I've got a couple pictures at home that you might want to use in future exhibits that you don't have in this.
Sure.
Or maybe you have more than you can.
Well.
You read it for tomorrow.
I have more than I could, could show you. I didn't want to keep you here all night.
Very, very good. Very interesting.
But we still have some questions to address.
Michael?
Yeah.
I have brought this with me tonight. I didn't know whether you had seen it or not. It's an article that was written by Horace Belcher, and it was talking about the Anthony Ahorn tavern. I tried to make a copy for you. It's a lousy picture. But you were talking about when was it raised?
Yeah.
In this article, it says the structure was raised in spring of 1954.
54. I don't, what date did I have? Do you know?
I think you said you weren't sure.
Oh, okay.
We were discussing, could it be 52, 54, 64?
Right.
And it's, this one says 54. Yeah.
Let's see. It says here, torn down October 25th, 1964. So they must have gotten
That's
the wrong.
Incorrect.
It must be 54.
They're on the wrong tab.
Yeah, the wrong decade.
Wrong tap. They're probably referring to Mitchell. No,
that was earlier.
Was earlier than that.
Yeah.
Which one came out in 64? I don't know.
Let me ask you a question. Is it confusing to you that all of Patuxent Village is a national historic district? The Warwick side, in addition to being a national district, it's a city district, historic district. Cranston site is not.
Cranston site should be. And I think Jonathan's working on that.
Well, what's the difference? Let me ask you, what's the difference between being a national register district and being a city historic district? Anybody know?
National, federal funds. And then the city keeps a closer tabs on what's going on than the federal government does.
Yes. I mean, it goes beyond just closer tabs.
When you have a national historic district, it means that there can never be federal funds used to destroy the character of the district or any of it. When you have the local designation in addition, it gives you the further protection of not only federal but private funds being used to destroy the character of a historic structure. On the outside only.
Well.
Only the exterior.
And that, but there is a big difference. Another big difference.
So I was going to say, if it's a city, don't you have to, like, say you want to add a window or a door, you have to get approval, or if you want to change the type of windows you have.
Yeah, well, that's. Character.
Right. But just because you're in the national district, being in the national district, let's put it this way, in a positive way, being in the national district doesn't require you to go through any kind of review process if you want to change something on the outside of your house. So on the Cranston side, it's a national district, but if I own the Smith House that's still standing, and I wanted to demolish it, I wouldn't need to get any sort of particular permission to do that. When they put in the bow windows and the vertical siding, they didn't give anybody permission. They didn't need permission. But if it was on the Warwick side, being in the city district, then if you wanted to change something like that, you would have to bring your plans in to the Historic District Commission. The commissioners are appointed by the mayor, and they come from backgrounds of architecture, history, preservation, planning, related fields, and they review your plans and discuss with you is this appropriate or not appropriate? Is it compatible with your structure? If you have a late Victorian house, do you want to put in Anderson windows that belong in, say, a